I call the Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, February 18th, 2026, and the time is 3:30 p.m. Thanks for joining us, and please turn off your cell phones. Committee members present today is everyone. We've got Senators Rauscher, Kawasaki, Myers, Dunbar, Feynman, Vice Chair Wilikowski, and myself, Chair Giesel. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Heather, who's keeping the minutes of the meeting, and to Zach, who's helping us out with the audio. We have two items on today's agenda. The first one is Senate Bill 180, LNG Import Facilities, and the second is Senate Bill 227, Tax Compact, Sales Tax, Oil and Gas Tax. So first up is Senate Bill 180. We have lots of stuff here. We've heard this bill two or three times, had public testimony on it. And so do committee members have any questions, any comments? All right, seeing none, Senator Wilikowski, I will entertain a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move Senate Bill 180, version 34-LS0819, /A from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note. Legislative legal has the authority to make any technical and conforming changes.
All right. Seeing no objection, the bill is moved. We will take a brief at ease to sign the documents. Committee back, Senate Resources Committee back to order. We are now at the second item on our agenda, which is Senate Bill 227. This is the third hearing of Senate Bill 227. Last time the bill was taken up before committee, we adopted version I. I as in India. Today we will look to do some amendments. The amendment deadline was noon today. Before we go forward, however, with the amendments, which we'll do in just a moment, I did want to respond. I got a very nice letter from Senators Meyer and Rauscher asking that we get some fiscal modeling on the version I as in India. And I certainly would look forward to getting that fiscal modeling. Bills don't get fiscal notes and fiscal modeling until they get to the next committee of referral. So that will be Senate Finance. So I certainly will be watching Senate Finance to see that modeling, and I assume you will be also. So I just wanted to respond to your letter. So thank you for sending that. And committee members also received the letter. So Just wanted to touch base with that and let the public know. So we will take up amendments, and we have received several. Senator Klayman, you offered an amendment. Would you like to move your amendment?
I'll move amendment number I.5.
All right, and I will object to amendment I.5 for purposes of discussion. Senator Klayman, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Amendment 5, what I would largely, or I.5, what it largely does is it takes the school head tax and doesn't exactly adjust it for inflation, but makes it more consistent with what the value of the school head tax was in 1980 when we last had a school head tax. And what it does is, instead of having $10, $15, $20, and $30, those figures are raised the $10 goes up to $100, the $15 goes up to $150, and the $20 goes up to $200, and the $30 goes up to $300. Part of it is it's likely that administering the tax is actually going to cost several million dollars, and at the small figures involved in the proposed language, we would probably barely collect as much money as we need to administer. And I think raising the amounts makes it more consistent with the cost of actually administering the tax. I think part of why I've made this amendment is we have been consistently hearing that we've underfunded our public education system for years. We raised the base student allocation by $700 last year, but we needed to raise it by more to just keep up with inflation over the past decade. We heard recently this month about the Anchorage School District with a budget of over $90 million in cuts that's going to be devastating, cutting teachers, counselors, nurses, school supports, and more. And this is not just Anchorage. It's districts across the state that are having the same challenge. So if we're going to go down the path of having a school head tax, I think that school head tax should actually reflect or be more reflective of how it's going to help our schools. And I think one of the appealing parts of the school head tax, I've been actually getting emails periodically over the years saying, let's go back to a school head tax. Let's go back to a school head tax. It made sense. One of the nice parts about for out-of-state workers, even if they don't file income taxes, the old program would take it out of their first paycheck so that seasonal workers would pay the tax. And it was partly structured to make sure that people who came to Alaska actually contributed to our schools and were supporting our schools. And so I'm not sure this bill is set up for that would come out of the first paycheck, but my support for a school tax is partly that it would be taken out of the first paycheck and people wouldn't have to actually file an income tax return to pay it. It would come out of the check. There would be means one could apply to I think, get money back if you paid twice, or if you could show that you didn't need to pay the tax, there'd be means to seek a refund, but it would be collected by the employer right away and paid with quarterly tax payments. And so there wouldn't necessarily be an income tax involved. There would be a tax, but you wouldn't have to file an income tax form to pay it. So I think it's a simple way to collect revenue, have that support our schools, and for the public to really see that we hear the concern about school funding.
Thank you, Senator Klayman. Are there further comments? Well, Senator Dunbar?
Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. If you weren't going to maintain your objection, I was going to object.
I was going to maintain my objection. Did you have further comments under discussion?
Yes. So I will say that I can't support this amendment, although I appreciate the spirit in which it is intended. I certainly do agree with the need to increase our education funding. I do think, you know, this effectively increases the amount collected by a factor of 10. And it gets into amount of money that I think would at the low end, cause some sticker shock for the poorest individuals in our community. And so I think that the overall package raises the funds we need to inflation adjust, education this year. And so I was going to, if no one else wants to, I'll let you do a comment first, but if not, I have an amendment to the amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Further comments on Senator Klayman's amendment? I would just comment, Senator Klayman, I too have a concern about the low end. I completely agree with you. This was not adjusted for inflation. You're right. In fact, adjusted for inflation, I think it's $110 on the lowest one.
I agree with that. It was an easier number to do 10 than 11.
Understood. But yeah, so that would be my concern. So with that, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection?
I object, Madam Chair, and I have an amendment to the amendment.
Senator Dunbar.
So it'll have to be a conceptual amendment, but I think it is simple enough that folks will be able to follow it. Rather than increasing by a factor of 10, it would increase by a factor of 2. So we would go from $10 to $20, 15 to 30, 20 to 40, 30 to 60. And the reason why I'm offering this amendment is, first of all, I do think that the number is too large on the low end for the original amendment. But I do acknowledge the point that Senator Klayman made about administration costs, and you do want to raise enough money so you can cover your administration costs and then have some left over for, in this case, schools. So in that spirit, I'm offering an amendment to the amendment.
Now, I would object to the – I would partially object to the amendment.
Senator Klayman, please.
I have no problem with the amendment to the first one if he wants to change – 100 to 20, I have no objection to that. But as to the other three, I would object to the other three. And I'll let Madam Chair figure out how to procedurally deal with that.
I know.
Is there further discussion on the amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, Heather, would you call the roll on the amendment to the amendment, that being changing the increase to, instead of times 10, to changing it to times 2, 20, 30, 40, and 60 at each level. Heather.
Could we go off record for a moment?
Pause for one moment, Heather. We're back on the record. Heather, you are going to call the roll on the amendment to the amendment.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yes.
Senator Kawasaki.
Yes.
Senator Rauscher.
No.
Senator Dunbar.
Yes.
Senator Klayman.
No.
Senator Myers.
No.
Senator Giesel.
Yes.
4 yeas, 3 nays.
So by a vote of 4 yeas and 3 nays, the amendment has been adopted, which multiplies the amounts on lines 2, 6, 10, and 14 by 2. Is there further discussion or amendments?
Madam Chair, I would move an amendment to the amendment.
All right.
And the amendment to the amendment would be the change on lines 27 or line 24, 25, and 26. If I'm doing my math right, I would multiply all those by 5. So you would raise $30 to 150, $40 to 200, and $60 to 300.
I want to speak. I just, when I vote, they went.
All right. So for clarification, we have an amendment before us offered by Senator Klayman, which is I.5. And you have proposed on line 6, making the number, excuse me, on line 7, making the number 150, on line 11, making it 200, and on line 15, making it 300.
Correct.
Very good. Is there discussion? Senator Rauscher.
I'd like to hear from the maker of the underlying amendment.
Senator?
Who do you want to hear from? I'm not sure which underlying.
The amended version? Is that what you're?
From the version we're amending with the new amendment.
All right. So the amended amendment was offered by Senator Dunbar. Senator Dunbar?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize. I am familiar with Robert's rules more than Mason's. And so I'm still in the Anchorage Assembly mode when it comes to amending things. Because I am not the maker of this amendment, right? Senator Klayman is. I will say that I don't support the further amendment to the amendment. partially because I do think that the folks, and I don't want to go back through, I don't want to go through every line, but I think the folks that are impacted at the $30 level are also what I would consider more moderate means. Beyond that, you know, this is the first time that we have instituted an education head tax, if this were to pass, since the 1980s. And I don't want the public to get sticker shock at any income level. I want us as Alaskans to again feel like we have skin in the game when it comes to supporting our schools. And so I want to put forward a version that I think has the best chance to pass Senate Finance and pass this body. Now, granted, Senate Finance can change these numbers however they want. We all know that. But because of that, because I like the lower numbers in general, but I like the spirit of the proposal in total, I will oppose this amendment to the amendment as amended.
Further discussion. I will comment then. Line 7, which would become $150 for the first paycheck of the year, would affect individuals who are making $30,000 to $90,000 a year. I'm doing this off memory because I don't have the original bill in front of me, but I'm pretty sure that's it. I have to agree with Senator Dunbar that that could be problematic for that income level. And so for that reason, I would agree with Senator Dunbar that that would be uncomfortable to me as well. Is there further discussion? All right. Seeing none, is there objection to the amendment to the amendment to the amendment?
I object.
Okay. So with that, Heather, would you call the roll? And to clarify, this is an amendment to the amended amendment, and we're taking line 7 and proposing making that 150, line 11 to 200, and line 15 to 300 of amendment I.5. Heather.
Senator Dunbar.
No.
Senator Klayman.
Yes.
Senator Wilikowski.
No.
Senator Kawasaki.
No.
Senator Myers.
No.
Senator Rauscher.
No.
Senator Giesel.
No.
One yay, six nays.
So with that, that amendment to the amendment to the amendment has failed. So the final decision, just for clarification for the public, to amendment I.5 is that on line 3, that number would be 20. On line 7, the number would be 30. On line 11, it would be 40. And on line 15, it would be 60. All right. That is amendment number I.5. The next amendment up before us is amendment number Yes?
Do we need to vote to adopt the amendment, Madam Chair?
Thank you.
Unless nobody objects.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Does anyone object to the amendment? Object. Thank you very much for that. Is there any objection to the amendment?
Object.
All right. Would you like to speak to your amendment, Senator Rauscher?
Just for the sake of...
Please.
The vote.
Oh, just for discussion?
Well, I thought that if nobody objects, then it was okay, so I objected. So it's for the vote.
And we can have discussion under that objection. Yes. Did you wish to speak, Senator Klayman? I thought you... Okay.
Nope.
Any other discussion?
My position about as clear as mud, so...
any other discussion on that final motion? All right. So would you maintain your objection then?
I'll maintain it.
All right. Heather, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Klayman.
Yes.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yes.
Senator Kawasaki.
Yes.
Senator Rauscher.
No.
Senator Dunbar.
Yes.
Senator Myers.
No.
Senator Giesel.
Yes.
5 yays, 2 nays.
Thank you. And thank you, Senator Rauscher and Senator Dunbar, for reminding me to vote finally on it. So amendment number I.5 has been adopted. Next, we have before us an amendment I.2 offered by Senator Wilikowski. Senator Wilikowski?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move I.2.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. Madam Chair, as we've heard many times from our consultants and our experts, we have one of, if not the most complicated oil tax structure in the world. And we used to have a gross tax in Alaska. We used to tax at a rate of 12.5%. As the tax has changed over the years, we now have a series of tax credits, tax breaks, tax deductions, which are extremely complicated. And just to give you some examples, we have tax credit system, which is a slider from $0 to $8. And it sometimes has impacts that I think were not probably contemplated. For example, in several years ago at Prudhoe Bay, we had an initial spend of $86 million. I think that was adjusted in the subsequent amendments to maybe $100 or $150 million. But for that $150 million of investment, the producers got $720 million in tax credits. Tax credits have cost us well over $1 billion per year in a number of years. That's one problem with our tax structure. Another problem is we're now learning the impacts of this amendment, which was added at some point, called the gross value reduction. The gross value, we thought we had a minimum tax in place of 4%, an extremely, extremely low tax of a minimum 4% that you can't go below. But now we're learning that, well, actually, you can go below it. In fact, companies are going below it. And we're learning that in the next few years, companies will be able to drive below that 4% minimum tax. 40% of our oil will be below the minimum tax. We'll be taking advantage of the gross value reduction, which will drive our tax rate below the minimum. We have a constitutional obligation to get the maximum benefit for a resource. I don't believe we're getting the maximum benefit for our resource when we are collecting so little for our oil revenue. We have other provisions, carry forwards, where companies can invest now and all their expenses they can deduct. And if they can't deduct it in this year's taxes, well, they can deduct it next year. And if they can't deduct it next year, they can deduct it 10 years down the road. And so we have all these cash flow problems with our structure. We are learning that the Willow Project, a project which every single person in the legislature supported, Republican and Democrat supported, and yet we're learning that the Willow Project, even though it's not in production and won't be in production for several more years, is costing the state of Alaska. We don't even know what the cost is, but we know that the producer is able to write off 35% of their costs off their taxes. If they spend $1 billion, that means they could potentially be writing off $350 million. We think the impact is $250 to $300 million per year. And that's every year. That's last year. That's the year before. That's this year. That's next year. No production. And when Willow goes into production finally, because it's on NPRA land, we get no royalties for it. And then when it does finally, we are finally able to tax it, the gross value reduction kicks in, Madam Chair, in which case the producer will be able to drive their taxes to below 4%, possibly even to zero. This is a tax structure that is fatally flawed. And we've tried and we've tried and we've tried over the years to fix it and fix it and fix it. And we just can't. We just haven't been able to because there was a huge fight when we went to a net profits tax. We thought some of us in the legislature said, we're going to get gamed. We cannot compete with the best tax accountants, the best tax attorneys in the world that are working for the oil industry. We just can't. And unfortunately, that's been proven true. We've got oil audits right now, which we're waiting to hear the results from. We've got our auditor is asking for auditing information from the executive branch. They've just flat out refused to give us the information in a format that we can understand, that the auditor can understand. First time in the history of our state. We used to collect several hundred million dollars per year when the audits were done. We're down to a couple million dollars per year after the audits were done. Years of audits. Collected $100 or more million per year. Now it's down to $2 million per year. And so the system is, I think, fatally flawed. And what this amendment does is it scraps the failed experiment of the net profits tax and takes us back to a gross tax structure. It's a gross tax that is used, similar to one that is used in Texas, similar to one that is used in North Dakota, similar to one, quite frankly, that's used in just about every state in the country that produces oil. Now, we can debate what the percentage should be, and I put it at 17.5%. For decades, we had it at 12.5%. How did I come up with 17.5%? Well, I'll give you a few numbers. First of all, what should we be getting for our oil? What is getting our maximum benefit for our oil? Well, Governor Hammond said it, and we've all heard it. It should be a third, a third, a third. A third for the state, a third for the oil industry, and a third for the federal government. For decades, prior to Senate Bill 21, we were getting about 27% of the gross. Under ACES, we were getting 38% of the gross. When you look at other states, many other oil states around the country are getting 30% of the gross. And so we looked and we said, well, how can we get around 30% of the gross for between our taxes and our royalties? We get 12.5% royalties in Alaska. And that's why the tax is higher than some other states, because our royalties are so low. And we capture our value of our oil through a variety of mechanisms. But the reality is, if we're getting a combined gross of right now 16% roughly, and every other state is getting close to 30%, I don't think we're maximizing the value of our oil as we're required to under the Constitution. And so so when you take 17.5% gross and you add that to our existing, generally speaking, 12.5% royalty, you get a gross of around 30%. That's how I came up with the number. Again, you can look at other states. I think this puts us in comparable territory to where other states is when you combine the taxes and the royalties. I think we're very comparable. It makes our system simple. It's simply you calculate the wellhead value. That's your tax. Simple as that. Oil comes out of the ground at $100 a barrel. We get companies get to write off some deductions, which is standard, but we'd get roughly $17.50, and I think that's a fair system. This bill would scrap the oil tax credits. It would scrap the net profits tax. It would scrap the gross value reduction. It would scrap the carry forwards. It would say it's very simple. It's a 17.5% tax. And you can look, the other thing I would say, Madam Chair, is a lot of promises were made to get the tax structure that we had in place. And we all remember those promises. We all remember this one. More oil, more jobs. Good for Alaska. And we know that we had roughly 15,000 jobs when we passed Senate Bill 21. 15,000 jobs in the oil industry. And now we have 9,000. Now the industry is actually celebrating. Well, we've actually hiring some more people to do Willow and Pikka, and we're up to 9,000. And so we're down thousands of jobs from where we were. So we haven't gotten more jobs. We've gotten less jobs. And in fact, not only are we getting less jobs, but the new economic report that just came out showed that 40% of the oil industry jobs are going to people that don't even live in Alaska. This is not us getting the maximum value for our resource when we're getting less, and then we're shipping the jobs out to people in Alaska. In fact, right after, in one of the most cynical moves that I've seen, I've been doing this a long time, right after Senate Bill 21, there was an initiative to overturn that. Right after that failed, and the industry spent millions of dollars saying, you're going to get more oil and more jobs. The BP, the front page of the Anchorage Daily News, where BP lays off 475 employees, right? We didn't get more jobs. We got thousands of less jobs. They said they were going to save the PFD, right? This was just a couple of years ago. Again, just a couple of years ago when we voted to overturn it. Vote no on one, save jobs and the PFD. Thousands of fewer jobs. And we all know what's happened to the PFD. Oil used to fund 90% of our state government and now funds roughly 23%. How are we making up for that? We'd have no other major taxes. We have no sales tax, no income tax. So it hasn't saved the PFD. In fact, you could probably call this bill the Save the PFD Amendment. You could call it the Keep It Simple Amendment. Because by passing this will allow us to pay a reasonable PFD. It will allow us to fund education. It will allow us to fund basic infrastructure projects. It will allow us to fund the basic services that the people of Alaska demand and expect from us. We've heard about more oil production. Remember, they spent tens of millions of dollars telling us we're going to get more oil production. Well, I hate to tell you, we have less oil production today than when Senate Bill 21 passed. Sure, we're getting more barrels of oil on the line. There's no doubt about that. Willow and Pikka are coming on. But you know what? They were coming online anyway. Willow's been in discussion for years. And the irony is we're going to increase oil production by probably 150,000 barrels a day. And our revenue is flat. Because the way our tax structure is, we don't capture revenue for it. All the profits, all the revenue flow to the industry. This is about balancing our situation out. We were promised more investment. Did we get more investment? Well, if you look slope-wide, we're getting roughly half the investment slope-wide than we were getting in 2013. In fact, at Prudhoe Bay, just a few years ago, in 2013, we spent Prudhoe Bay investment was roughly $870 million. That dropped to about $86 million in just a few years later, 10%. It's now up to probably 25% of what we were getting back in 2013. We didn't get more investment. We got much, much, much less investment. And remember, for the investment, the pittance, a couple hundred million dollars, we appreciate it. We're paying hundreds of millions of dollars more in tax credits to get that investment. That is a broken system. It's so broken, in fact, that if you look at how much revenue we've taken in, you can go back and you can compare what we made on a per barrel basis. And in 2009, oil was $68.34. And we got, the state of Alaska got $12.09 per barrel revenue. Okay. 2019, 10 years later, new tax structure, SB 21, oil $69.46. It's 12 cents higher. Yet we got $3.14 per barrel from the state of Alaska. $3.14 under the current tax structure, $12.09 under the old tax structure. You can look at 2010, oil is $74.90. We got $12.03 per barrel. 2015, oil is at $72.58. We get $2.01. We get a fraction of what we used to get, a fraction. And this is an attempt for us to maximize the value for our resource. In fact, we had 3 years, 2015, 2016, 2017, when after you factor in the tax credits, we actually had a negative tax rate. In other words, we paid the oil industry to take our oil. That's crazy. What kind of business would ever do that? If you were, we talk about how we're the CEOs, we're the board of directors, the governor's the CEO, or the ranch hand, as Governor Hickley used to say, we're the board of directors of this Alaska company that's in charge of managing our resource. And we have 3 years where we were getting a negative tax rate, negative production tax rate after you factor in tax credits. That is not getting the maximum value for our resource. And so what this simply does is scraps this failed experiment that we had of a net profits tax. It gets us to roughly where Jay Hammond said we should be, a third, a third, a third. It puts us in line with where most other states, quite frankly, are in the United States, with roughly a 30% gross on our taxes and royalties combined. And I know the industry's gonna hate it and gonna yell and scream, but you know what? They yelled and screamed when we went over a 15 cent per barrel increase, $25 million. You try to come in and raise it a penny, they're gonna come in and send in a fleet of lobbyists to oppose it. So we've got to do what's right for the people of Alaska. And this is our opportunity to do it. Is 17.5% the right number? I think it is. But, you know, it's going to go to finance, and they're going to do some more modeling on it, and they're going to take a look at it. And I have no doubt that they will look at it very closely. And so I would urge your support for this. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. Senator Rauscher.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So I appreciate all the work, 14 pages in this amendment. It's a lot of moving parts, replacing a lot of different structures that are in place, changing some numbers, percentages. So I basically have only known about this amendment or actually got to read it in the last hour. Okay. So, and I know there was a deadline at noon today. And so, because I still worry about modeling, I really haven't been able to challenge all this in my mind completely. And so, I'm going to be a no, just on principle, because I really can't calculate that fast to understand it. And I appreciate all the work. I really do. And I appreciate what Senator Wilkowski does with I really do. I'm not even making it up. But I'm serious. But I appreciate it. And I'm going to have to be a no for those reasons. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Rauscher. Further comments? Senator Myers.
Yeah, just a question. Senator Wilkowski mentioned similar process to what happens in Texas and a couple other states. My understanding is that in Texas and those other states that the You know, the numbers might be different, but the overall structure of those taxes is they end up being regressive. So as the prices go up, the state actually takes less of the value. Would that then make, does this amendment then make our taxes regressive then?
Senator Wilikowski.
Through the chair. Yes. Thank you. A gross tax is, it does take more at lower dollars, and it takes less at higher dollars. And so that's the trade-off. And Texas has a gross tax, and they're producing 6 million barrels per day. And North Dakota, through their boom of producing millions of barrels a day, they had a gross tax too. So does that fundamentally mean that oil companies will invest less? We'd have to run numbers on it. But here's the thing. We can't even get the information from the industry. We have the Department of Natural Resources commissioner, the DOR commissioner, come in and testify, and you ask him, well, how much profit did the oil companies make? I can't tell you that. What's the rate of return at Prudhoe Bay? I can't tell you that. We can't even get the information to make even fundamental decisions. And so is it a regressive tax? It does tax more at lower levels fundamentally by its nature, and it taxes less at higher levels. If oil prices go up to $100, we probably make out better with our current tax structure. But actually, I can't even guarantee that, because our current tax structure, we make less just about at every price range. So we've gone down this pathway of trying, you know, kind of tinkering it and trying to encourage more development and trying to balance our revenue. And it's failed. It just has been from a revenue standpoint, from a job standpoint, from an investment standpoint, from a saving the permanent fund standpoint, it has not produced what we were told it would produce.
Okay. Senator Myers, just a comment, and we do have Brandon Spanos online. He is the acting director of the tax division, so we can certainly ask him a question, and perhaps he would want to comment on what I'm about to comment. I believe that during COVID, oil prices went negative.
For about 2 days.
But the state continued to collect taxes because of the structure from oil companies. So even though this proposal may take more at lower prices, our current structure was meant to do that as well.
I'm thinking about it. You know, one of the things that we talked about both under ACES and under the SB 21 is, you know, as the prices went up, oil companies made more money. We wanted to make more money too. We wanted to be a partner in that. And, you know, that was one of the arguments over ACES versus SB 21 is where do we draw that line? That's a fair argument to make regardless of what the numbers are. You know, in some place like Texas or North Dakota or what have you, as their numbers go up, it attracts more activity. They don't make more money off of the oil, but they do make more money because of the sales taxes and the income taxes that they have. And so that pulls in more money to the state as the activity is increasing. We don't have that backstop here. We had it in this bill, but we pulled it out. So we don't have that backstop. And it seems to me that one of the downsides then of doing a regressive tax is that as you potentially have more activity and the state then has more expenses as more people come in and do things, you know, whether it's as simple as more maintenance on the Dead Horse Airport, or it's, you know, or it's actually more people moving into Anchorage and Fairbanks. You know, that's something that we have to take into account. So this, while I appreciate what the maker of the amendment is trying to do, and at least in principle, I understand, I somewhat agree with it, where, yeah, we need to have, you know, we need to have fewer lawyers and accountants necessary in order for us to have a functioning tax structure on both sides, both for us and the oil companies. I agree with that theory in principle. I'm thinking about that difference there between a regressive and a progressive tax, how that affects us as a state. And then I'm looking at the different pieces in here, and I'm thinking this amendment needs about 4 committee hearings by itself, give or take. So I'm having a hard time with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Myers. Just one comment. Texas doesn't have an income tax.
No, but
which is, but they do have taxes on S corporations, which are different than a simple S tax, S corporation tax. Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to support the amendment. I was here when we evaluated the PPT and then when we evaluated ACES. And for the life of me, I couldn't understand why we're going to a profits-based system and how we're not going to get gamed in a future situation. And what we have is very simple. What we had was very simple. And I think it's sort of the greatest illusion. We've even heard Senator Wilikowski say it. But the greatest illusion that the industry actually wants us to believe is that the industry is paying a tax. That is the statement. We are giving them a barrel of oil. We have a barrel of oil. It's worth a certain amount of money. Today it's worth $69 a barrel. We get somewhere between 12.5% and 16.5% of the value of that in royalty. And then we get something of that in what our production tax is right now. But when, as Senator Wilikowski's shown, we are actually, there are years when we have been paying them back. We've been paying for them to basically pump our own oil. This is a very simplistic system that people can understand. It's a barrel of oil has a value. This is the value of oil. This is what we should get for it. And this is what the people of Alaska are entitled to. 17% plus the 12.5% royalty under the Constitution sounds very fair to me. It allows a company to decide whether they're going to be able to make a profit with the other 67% of the value of a barrel of oil at any one particular time, and then move forward. So again, it simplifies the system. It's one barrel of oil worth $67. We get 33% and they get 2/3 of it, and they get to make a profit off that. And they have made a tremendous profit over that before, when it was the economic limit factor, soon after when it was the PPT, and then when ACES came to be. So I'm supportive of the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to respond to something that both Senator Myers and Senator Wilikowski said, and I agree with it, which is the people most harmed by this amendment are the lawyers and the accountants. Many years ago, I was a corporate lawyer, and I won't say, and I worked for a firm. I won't name the firm and I won't name the producer, but we worked with a major oil producer. And my overwhelming impression after that experience was that the state was outgunned, hopelessly outgunned. And that's not to say we don't have great people working in the Department of Revenue and the Department of Natural Resources, but the fleet of very highly compensated lawyers and accountants that these companies could bring to bear was frankly overwhelming. And this kind of system, which is used almost everywhere else in the world, would put a great number of them out of business. And so while I'm very sad for my colleagues in the legal profession, I think it still would be much better for the people of Alaska, and perhaps even for some folks in the oil industry too. They could focus more on producing the oils, sort of similar to people don't get into health insurance. People don't get into healthcare to figure out how to game health insurance, right? They figure out how to actually help people. Complexity in our system has driven inefficiency and harmed Alaska. And so I don't know if this is the exact right number. There will be modeling and there will be alteration in Senate Finance. But because I believe we would all benefit from a simpler system, I will support the amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Senator Klayman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's always interesting when people talk about how Alaska's oil and gas tax system is so complicated. There's in the law, we call them horn books, but a person that had for many years wrote kind of the treatise on oil and gas tax law, and a guy's name was Hemingway, no relation to Ernest, but it's one of these books, and you open up the Hemingway book on oil and gas tax law, and what you discover is Alaska is not in there, because we are way, way, way too complicated and way too just simply complicated and hard to follow. And so when people are trying to understand how you tax oil and gas tax production, you want to look at places that have relatively simple systems. I have talked with a number of folks in the oil industry, more dinner table conversations and other gatherings that aren't formal legislative meetings. And there's a lot of interest in a kind of a flat tax structure that's fairly straightforward and easy to apply. I will say, in contrast to both Senator Dunbar, Senator Myers, and Senator Wilikowski, that going to a simpler tax system does not keep the lawyers out of business, and it does not keep the accountants out of business. A journey through downtown Houston and the law firms in downtown Houston with what is thought to be a simple tax system in Texas does not suggest the lawyers aren't busy on all sides, and I don't think any change would change that structure. But I do think that Alaska's system is incredibly complicated. I also think if we're going to make changes in that system for both the public and for oil industries here, that should be a fairly methodical process. And I don't believe that this is that process. So I am willing to let this bill go forward to the Finance Committee without many, many hearings on this committee. I think a case could be made we should have more hearings, but this is the second of a two-year legislative session. We don't have time to dig into it for months and months. I'm not going to support this amendment because I think it's a massive change to a system that has been criticized, but it has been in place for many years. And I think we should, if we're going to make changes, that needs to be a much more methodical process than we can do. So I'm not going to support amendment number I, too, although I appreciate the spirit with which Senator Wilikowski has offered it.
Thank you, Senator Klayman. We have in the room, we have online, I've already mentioned, Brendan Spanis, Acting Director of the Tax Division, but we also have Janelle Earls. She's the Acting Commissioner of the Department of Revenue, and Dan Stickle, Chief Economist. And so I would invite Mr. Stickle and Ms. Earls forward, Commissioner Earls forward. I realize this is spur of the moment for you, but just to get some input, and I will also ask Director Spanus for comment. Welcome. So, Commissioner Earls, I will start with you. Do you have any comment about the amendment going from a net tax to a gross tax?
Madam Chair, I don't have, for the record, Janelle Earls, Acting Commissioner for the Department of Revenue. I don't know enough about oil and gas tax, honestly, to give an opinion. So I will defer to Chief Economist Stickle.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I will next ask Brendan Spanus, who is the Acting Director of the Tax Division, before I go to his staff. Director Stavanos, I realize this is somewhat spur of the moment for you, but do you have any comments about the move to a gross tax?
Madam Chair, for the record, Brandon Stavanos, Acting Director with the Tax Division. I don't have any personal input. I don't know what the governor's position is on this amendment, as we're just hearing about it today. So I can't speak with the governor from an administrative standpoint. We will administer whatever the legislature and governor agree to. If that becomes a gross tax, we're happy to administer a gross tax or the current next tax. It has been mentioned a bit more complicated, but we do have the current expertise to administer that. Happy to continue administering that or whatever the state prefers or decides on.
Thank you, Mr. Spanos. Chief Economist Stickle, you have done multiple presentations on the present tax structure. In fact, you did a great brief overview of the order of operations to execute the current tax structure. I suspect you look at this amendment and can envision in your mind what it would look like. Would you be willing to share comments about a gross tax and the complexities?
Sure, Madam Chair. Dan Stickle, Chief Economist with the Department of Revenue, for the record. So in terms of complexity, obviously our system is extremely complicated. Spent almost 2 hours in the Finance Committee earlier this week doing a simplified version of our order of operations. So reduction in complexity is a laudable goal. Obviously we have not analyzed or modeled this particular amendment in detail. Initial reaction is it would be a very significant tax increase, and that would have material economic impacts on the industry.
Thank you for that. So if the 17.5% were a lower number, would you suppose that would create a lower impact on the industry?
Chair Giesel, obviously a lower tax has a lower impact.
But the complexity of changing that to a lower number would be more simple than adding another tax credit to the proposal or the process we have on the books right now. Our current tax structure, adding more tweaks to the credits and deductions, it would be much simpler to simply go to a gross tax but adjust that percent.
Chair Giesel, we'd need to see the specific proposal. Generally, a gross tax could be simpler. It could also be complicated. We had a gross tax for many years under the economic limit factor, and the basic concept of that was fairly simple, of having a gross tax, but then there was adjustment with a factor that was intended to allow for profitability and productivity of different fields. There was field-specific ring fencing, and so there actually was a lot of complexity built into a gross tax. So we'd have to look at the specifics of the proposal.
Thank you. So it's the add-ons that complicate things.
Chair Giesel, that's correct. And even with our current net tax system, it's the basic concept of having a net profit system with a gross minimum tax floor is fairly straightforward, but there are lots of nuances to the system that add the complexity.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Spanos, the commissioner, or the director? All right. Thank you. Excuse me. Questions for Mr. Stickle. I think I misspoke there. All right. Seeing no further questions, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts. I'm going to make comment. You know, a gentleman by the name of Barry Pulliam is a consultant for the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, and he has been visiting legislators this week. During interim, he did a oil tax predominantly, overview, 101, if you will. It was multiple hours long. I know the slide deck he shared with me is approximately 65 slides. And I know that the Oil and Gas Association has arranged for him to do another 101, so to speak, on a Sunday in March. Again, a whole day. I think it's about 6 or 7 hours worth of education about our current tax structure. I've been here since 2011, almost the entire time, and it is a common statement that we have the most complex structure in the world, and it's complicated to bring on new people into our Department of Revenue Tax Division. It's complicated for the oil companies to have their fiscal people, their financial people, and their attorneys. We do have challenges to the taxes that are levied. Then that's got to be adjudicated. So the idea of going to something simpler is incredibly appealing. I don't know if 17.5 is the right number either. It makes sense if it's 17.5% tax and 12.5% royalty. That adds up to 30%. That's a third. That makes sense, but there's always more to the story. The fact is, we are at the fiscal cliff that has been foretold for at least the last 10 years. I mean, we're not just at it anymore. We are falling over it. The cliff is eroding under us as the cliff is doing in a location in California, and the houses are falling over the side. I think the houses of our families in Alaska are falling over the side as education decays due to lack of funding, public safety, road maintenance. We have families moving out. We've got nearly 25% of the employees not working here, taking their wages and paying income tax in another state. So all that under consideration, I think we need to have a discussion of, is it possible to simplify our structure? So for the sake of discussion of the subject, I think this is an amendment that we should consider. We are not the Finance Committee. We don't have the full cadre of of consultants and staff that are experienced in the subjects. And so this is a subject to push on to the Finance Committee. So with that, I'm going to move my objection to this amendment. Is there further objection?
I do.
Senator Rauscher, very good. Would you like to speak further to your objection?
No.
All right. Heather, would you please call the roll? And we are voting on Amendment I.2.
Senator Myers.
No.
Senator Dunbar.
Yes.
Senator Rauscher.
No.
Senator Kawasaki.
Yes.
Senator Willikowski.
Yes.
Senator Klayman.
No.
Senator Giesel.
Yes.
4 yeas, 3 nays.
And so on a vote of 4 yeas and 3 nays, amendment number I.2 has been adopted. That takes us to, I have amendment number I.3 offered by Senator Willikowski.
Madam Chair, I will not be offering I.3, I.4, or I.6. And if I could just explain why very briefly.
Yes, Senator Willikowski.
We got these drafted in the event that this did not, in the event that I-2 did not pass. And I think these amendments, and I hope to forward them up to the Finance Committee, they further prove the complexity of our system. The one amendment, I.3, we thought we hardened the floor in the CS that we came out a few days ago, but it actually didn't. And there's actually another little technicality that needs to be done to actually harden the floor. We thought we've had the hardened floor before. So that's what I.3 did. And it's just, again, just goes to the complexity. I.4 goes to using credits that you achieve in one field and applying them to another field. And what this amendment says is that you can't get more tax credits than what you invest. And that was to deal with the situation where you had $250 million in investment in a particular field, Prudhoe, and you got $700 million or $1 billion in tax credits for that investment. I think most people would consider that to be preposterous. But I-4 would have fixed that. And then I-6 was a ring fencing. Again, this is the complexities of our system. We've tried to fix ring fencing for years, but this one would have dealt with the situation where you have a company that's producing extremely expensive field in one area and then writing it off their taxes in another area and driving their tax rate taxes very low and costing us hundreds of millions of dollars to our cash flow. So, again, just the complexity of our tax structure would have necessitated these. I'd hope to forward these on to the Finance Committee, but I will not be offering those three amendments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Willikowski. So, we have now amended Senate Bill 227 with two amendments. That's I.5, related to the Education Index, and I.2, related to going to a gross tax. So at this point, Senator Willikowski, I would look to you for a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move CS for Senate Bill 227 as amended, version 3-4 / GS2496 / I.A from committee with as amended, with individual recommendations and forthcoming updated fiscal note. Legislative legal has the authority to make any technical and conforming changes.
I'll object.
Thank you. Would you like to speak to your objection?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I've got a lot of concerns with this bill, and I just kind of want to go over each of them. There's a lot of moving pieces in here. We made a lot of changes with the new CS on Monday, and then, of course, a couple of new changes today. First off, we removed the sales tax, which was kind of the heart of the bill initially, left the oil taxes and the corporate tax changes in there. In the presentation that a lot of us saw from ICER just a few weeks ago, which they just repeated online last week, ICER made relatively clear that economically, the oil and corporate taxes were the relatively safe options in the short term. They had the lowest impact on jobs and the economy, but they were also the worst options in the long term. One of the things that they noticed in their long-term model is that if you put in a sales tax or most of the other broad-based tax options, over the course of years, those jobs came back. The economy bounced back from the initial hit. Whereas the oil and corporate taxes, it was the other way around. We took the job hit initially, and over the course of the next couple of decades, those jobs stayed gone, or if anything, maybe even got a little bit worse. We removed the conditional language that tied it to these other bills. We've done conditional language in the legislature on a regular basis. We just had a big one last year where we tied portions of an education bill to an oil tax bill. That's relatively common. I understand legislative legal sent us a memo about that, but of course, they also said on the record, yes, there could be a challenge, but most likely it would survive just fine. So without that conditional language, though, tying us to the other pieces, the spending cap, the constitutional certainty on the PFD, things like that, this bill is no longer part of a fiscal plan. This is just another tax and spend plan. This is the same thing that we've been doing since the 70s in one way, shape, or form. ICER made it very clear to us in their presentation that just continuing on that pattern, even though we've changed the numbers, it leads to more GDP loss in the long term due to fiscal uncertainty. They emphasized to us that relying on oil money is the most volatile revenue source that we can get. Corporate tax money is the second most volatile revenue source that we can get. I did ask them what the volatility was on relying on investment earnings. They haven't gotten back to me yet. I agree with Senator Wilkowski in his comments that we should be getting the most from our resources. That's in our Constitution. I disagree a little bit because getting the most for our resources is not necessarily the same thing as getting the most money for the state. Different resources provide different benefits to the state and to the people of the state, more importantly. And that is something that we need to have a broader discussion about. In my personal opinion, oil money and the patterns that it creates is what got us into this mess. And without a full fiscal plan, simply increasing oil taxes and a little bit of corporate tax, to me, is the financial equivalent of trying to cure a hangover with a shot of vodka. We're going the wrong direction here. We've got the S-Corp changes. Just thinking about the companies that operate that's going to hit, the most obvious ones are Bluecrest, Hex, Hillcorp, and Glenfarne. The interesting thing that crosses my mind when I see those four names is that all four of those are companies that are trying to get us gas out of Cook Inlet. And I am concerned that we are going to be making it harder to get gas out of Cook Inlet in that end. I don't believe the S-Corp tax changes are about fairness. I brought this up a little bit last year as well. We have S-Corps that operate in timber, in fishing, in mining. If we're going to talk about S-Corps and how we're using that as the S-Corp taxes as a way that we get the maximum benefit from our resources, we're not touching the rest of those resources. One situation that popped up just a couple of years ago is there was a proposal on the table of two of the largest grocery chains in the state merging. And as part of that, they would have sold off some of the stores to a third grocery chain that operates down in Lower 48. Well, I took a look at it. That Lower 48 grocery chain is an S-Corp. And we would have, even under this bill, we still would have lost corporate revenue in that case. We've got the oil tax changes. Those have been changed again today. Obviously, as I already mentioned, there's the issue with regressivity. I get worried about costs as well. We are a very high cost state. You know, as I shared here a couple of weeks ago, just in the last 6 years that I've been driving the haul road, the cost to take a load up to Prudhoe has gone up nearly double. So, you know, Senator Wilkowski mentioned the price in 2009 versus the price now, being something close to the same. Well, yes, but we've had inflation and all kinds of other cost pressures pushing those costs up. The education head tax, by my estimate, we're looking at roughly $20 million under the changes that we made today. We're still looking at something in the neighborhood of $2.5 million or so to administer that. So it's still a significant chunk. I'm basing that number off of a fiscal note from former Senator Bishop's bill that covered this a couple of years ago. The interesting part is that even though this version of it, as opposed to previous versions, is still tied to income, the dollar figures in there, it's still a regressive tax, which is one of the complaints that we heard about sales taxes coming through here, is that sales taxes are regressive, so we shouldn't institute a sales tax. I'm looking at the dollar figures that it provides. You know, this kind of provides a veneer of everybody contributing around the state, but it still hits the same people that are hit the most by taking the PFD. Then there's a per barrel infrastructure charge. The interesting thing about that one is it's not actually the oil industry that has brought that to me and said that that's problematic. It's actually the mining industry and a couple of others that brought that to me as saying that it's problematic. What they're looking at is, no question, the haul road needs help. I've mentioned that here in committee. But this is not the right way to do it. Obviously, we can't dedicate funds. We can say designate. But even if we still are able to designate and it stays there, there is still the complete possibility that all we're going to do really is displace funds. Per barrel surcharge is estimated to bring in about $25 million under current volumes in the pipeline. And what DOT is telling us is current maintenance, I'm not counting the capital projects we talked about, but the current maintenance on the haul road is about $20 million a year. This is for the whole corridor, so that also includes the Elliott, the little bit of the Steese, the Richardson, all the way to Valdez. I got to imagine we spend at least $5 million a year maintaining the Richardson Highway. So it'd be very easy to just displace that money, and that money ends up somewhere else in the state. Maybe it's going into Medicaid. Maybe it's going into education. I don't know. But then we have no change in the maintenance. So that doesn't necessarily fix the problem. And it sets a bad precedent that these other industries have come to me talking about, because they are concerned that this sets a precedent of, we're going to directly charge industry in order to maintain public infrastructure. It's one thing to say, we're going to tax industry. This is how we operate as a state. This is how we've always operated as a state. But to, you know, and it's another thing to say, well, we're going to tax or cause a fee to an industry of some kind when it's directly benefiting that industry. You know, our licensing fees, for example, we understand that. But those aren't benefiting the general public. That is to maintain the cost of the program. They understand that. This is a very different case where we are directly going after industry to support infrastructure that anybody in the public can use. You know, I go up the haul road, and is the majority of the traffic trucks? Yeah, absolutely it is. You got the tourism industry uses that road. We got hunters that use that road. August is a very interesting time to drive that road because of all the caribou hunters. Same thing on the Richardson or anywhere else. So that's a concerning case. And the question is that model going to be copied for other industries and other locations around the state? So I got a lot of concerns with this bill, Madam Chair, and I cannot support moving this forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Myers. Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the debate. And I would this is a very – well, let me start by saying that actually the majority of the provisions in this bill are from the governor or were the governor's ideas at one point. The S-Corp provision, that was the governor's idea and said he would support it if we passed it. The internet tax, something that we passed on bipartisan lines, that was the governor's idea originally. And so that was a bill that he said he would support it before he vetoed it. The Dalton Highway Fund, that's the governor's idea. So the majority of this is the governor's ideas. What we changed fundamentally was the governor's plan to tax, to put in place a sales tax, which would affect every single Alaskan. That is a regressive tax. There's no doubt about it. That would impact low-income people tremendously. And we said, you know what? We're going to go back to what we did for decades. And we're going to follow our constitutional obligation, our constitutional mandate, to get the maximum value for a resource. You know, we talk about what should the fair share be. It's actually not fair share. The Constitution actually tells us we have to get the maximum value for our resource. Are we really getting the maximum value for our resource when we're getting 16 cents on every dollar of oil that goes through the pipeline, when Texas is getting 30 cents and North Dakota is getting close to 30 cents and every other state in the country is getting close to 30 cents and Norway's getting 78 cents and Iraq's getting 99 cents and Venezuela's getting 90 cents. Are we really getting the maximum value for our resource when we are underselling overwhelmingly? It's not even close. We've got some of the lowest oil, probably the lowest oil taxes in the world right now. And if you look at ConocoPhillips SEC reports every quarter, I'll show them to you. I'll get them because we get them from the legislative research. You're going to find that for the last 20 years, just about every single quarter for the last 20 years, the most profitable oil jurisdiction in the world, according to ConocoPhillips SEC reports, is the state of Alaska. They're doing great. All we're asking is, you know what? You used to fund 90% of our budget. You're now funding 23% of our budget. There's other reasons for it. Oil production is down. But you know what? You promised, you told us we're going to get 1 million barrels of oil if we pass this. In fact, I remember the press releases. I remember getting attacked for saying, you know what? I don't think you're going to get 1 million barrels of oil in 10 years, which is what we were promised, because that would have been 3 years ago. And 3 years ago, we had about 470,000 barrels of oil, half of what we were told we were going to get. But we were told, you know, you're going to get less, but you're going to make it up on volume. So not only did we get less, but we lost volume. Sure, we're getting more barrels coming online. That's great. But we're not making up for it because we're giving it away. Very little. We're getting very little for our resource. So what this bill does, what this amendment does as passed, it fundamentally says, you know what? We're going back to what we did for decades, what worked for the state of Alaska for decades, what actually got us 1 million barrels of oil in the pipeline for years before the decline started, which was we did 12.5% gross. This is a little bit higher. And, finance is going to massage it and going to work it up, and we'll see what comes out after that. But this is not about going after industry. I reject that notion completely. This is absolutely not about going after industry. This is about sticking up for the people of Alaska and doing our constitutional obligation to get the maximum value for our resource. And if you support the dividend, you know, a lot of people say, hey, we want a full dividend. But then you oppose every single effort to get a bigger dividend. Do you really support a big dividend? Do you really support a full dividend? I don't think you do. I don't think you do. Do you support education funding? If you oppose every single effort that would allow us to fund education, you can look at the Middle East. Look at the Middle East where they have very high tax rates. But you know what? They're building islands out in the middle of the ocean with their oil wealth and putting billion-dollar hotels and billion-dollar office complexes on those islands with their oil wealth. And we've got, in Alaska, we've got schools falling into the ocean. We've got schools that were black mold. We've got rats running around tippy toes in Mount Edgecombe. Look where we've gone. Norway came to us to learn about our dividend, our permanent fund program. Started it 20 years after ours. They've got $2 trillion in their permanent fund, in their sovereign wealth fund. Hey, I'm not complaining. We've got $88 million. That's fantastic. But Norway, charging a 78% tax rate, has $2 trillion. You know, you could say actually this, we're taking the 35% tax cut. I remember when we passed this Senate Bill 21, the industry kind of complains, this is going to be a 35% tax rate. It's a 35% tax rate. Really? Okay, well, now we're cutting it to 17.5%. So you're cutting the tax rate in half. Okay, so you know, two can play at that game, I suppose. But look, this is about us getting our fair share, and this is about us not imposing the cost on the lower income people. This is about imposing it on huge companies who are making massive amount of wealth in Alaska, and who have historically paid it and should be paying it, are paying it in every other state, are paying it in every other country, and should be paying it in Alaska. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll keep this short. I think both the prior senators very well articulated sort of some of the opposing views on this bill. Just two points I want to make. First, on Glenfarne. I asked Glenfarne directly, and I know a number of us have, if we alter the S-Corp, change that tax structure, would it impact your decision to build the Alaska LNG pipeline? They said no. Flat out, they were going to have a different kind of structure, and it did not impact their decision to build or not build. I asked, they answered. So I don't think Glenfarne is at issue here. The second, on the ICER study, and ICER is a great report, as Senator Meyer has highlighted, well worth reading and viewing their various graphs. They actually break out corporate taxes and oil taxes. And while there were some of the more pronounced long-term effects with the corporate taxes, I don't recall them being as large with the oil taxes. I think because the investment decisions are relatively, comparatively inelastic, the oil is here after all, and they have to get it somewhere, I don't believe we will have that same kind of long-term impact. And the last thing that that ICER study showed, and I think Senator Myers and Senator Wilkowski both agree on this, is that the worst way to balance the budget is to cut the PFD. In the way that it impacts the lowest income folks, it's the most aggressive way to do it. You know, in absolute terms, I have either the poorest or the second poorest lowest income district in Alaska. When we cut the PFD, it deeply impacts the people in my district. And if we want a sustainable, reasonably sized PFD, hopefully it can grow to a large PFD again at some point, we have to have revenue. We have to have different, more effective revenue sources. And our current path we are on is a path to a zero PFD without changes to our revenue structure. And you can talk about cuts all you want. We've been cutting for more than a decade. We've cut to the bone. I don't think we're getting particularly good road maintenance, not because DOT isn't working hard, but because we aren't giving them the funds they need. Our education funding is underfunded. You can go down the line. The only thing left to cut is the PFD is going to go to zero unless we change our revenue structure. And for that reason, I support this bill. It won't get us all the way there, but it's at least a step in the right direction, and it gets the right kind of conversation happening. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Further discussion?
Madam Chair.
I will. Yes, Senator Rauscher.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Through the chair. So I, in a lot of ways, Senator Myers spoke about the change from a fiscal plan to basically an oil policy, okay? And to a great extent it is, okay? States that have gross oil production taxes usually get less per barrel than what we get. So I'm not saying that Senator Wilkowski is wrong, because I cannot prove he's wrong. I cannot prove he's right either. So I guess what I'm saying is, what I can say could happen is, since SB 21, everybody goes, whether it failed or whether it worked, we're looking at 970,000 barrels in a few years, and we're looking at a lot more jobs. So in a way, it did work. In a way, it took some time, but in a way, it did work. Now, what this would do, will that hamper that or not? I don't know that answer either. But because I don't have any of those answers, I'm going to have to just stay, be a no on this. And I just wanted to give a reason why this is a point in my time here where I'm going, it worries me more if we do something we don't understand completely how it will affect the future than if I was to not do that and just stay with the fiscal plan. But anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Rauscher. Further comments? I'll make some closing comments. I don't think any of us know how this will affect the future. No one knows the future. The fact is, the sales tax that was present in this bill had no exemptions. It would seriously affect every person in the state, and it was policy that was overwhelmingly opposed. We built TAPS with an income tax and an education head tax and no dividend. That's what our state used to do. So that it distresses me that we have none of that now. We have no income tax. We have no education fee supporting our education system. And we have a dividend that is constantly a barrier to us getting a fiscal package together, a budget. Every year, it's a huge barrier. This is not a perfect bill. I would suggest that I'm certain AOGA will, Alaska Oil and Gas Association, will ask Mr. Pulliam to expand his 65 slides to include what a gross tax would look like. I mean, this could be a two-day seminar. Because this is complicated, and we have a lot of new people here, but this discussion needs to take place because we are falling off the cliff right now. Senator Wilkowski brought up Norway. They have beautiful roads. They're a northern, they're a circumpolar Arctic environment like we are. Beautiful roads, free education, and they still have an income tax, despite their sovereign wealth fund, which is at $2 trillion. So maybe there's some lessons there for us. This bill, so just for the public, what's left in the bill, we have the education head tax, which is very small. It is not an overwhelming tax, adjusted for income. We have the S-Corp tax, which has expanded. It goes down now to a company that is making a net profit of $1 million or more begins paying the corporate income tax if they're involved in the oil and gas industry, not only producing but also transporting. We moved the slider, so to speak, the deduction from 8% to 5%, which actually will come out of this bill now that the gross tax has been put in. We accepted the governor's suggestion to move the minimum tax from 4% to 6%. We accepted that, but it is now removed because we have a gross tax proposed. We still have the internet sales tax, which other states, 37 other states have, does not affect citizens, the amount they'll be paying for the products. And we accepted the governor's idea of a 15-cent surcharge per barrel of oil for maintenance of transportation. We indicated our preference was, our intent was it would maintain the road, the Dalton Highway. So that's what's left in the bill. And so with that, Senator Rauscher, you objected, I believe.
Yes, ma'am.
To moving the bill. Do you maintain your objection?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Thank you. Heather, would you please call the roll?
Senator Kawasaki.
Yes.
Senator Rauscher.
No.
Senator Dunbar.
Yes.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yes.
Senator Klayman.
Yes.
Senator Myers.
No.
Senator Giesel.
Yes.
5 yeas, 2 nays.
Thank you. So with 5 yeas and 2 nays, Senate Bill 227 moves from this committee on to finance, where it will be extensively modeled and debated and no doubt changed. So with that, today the committee has accomplished moving Senate Bill 180 related to LNG import facilities to the next committee of referral and Senate Bill 227 to finance. That concludes our agenda for today. Senator Rauscher, you look like you want to make a comment.
I've just been told that Norway has a net tax system.
They have an income tax, however.
Anyway, I just thought I'd say it. Not a gross tax, it's a net tax.
Thank you. Our next meeting will be on Friday, February 20th at 3:30. We are going to hear a governor's bill. This is Senate Bill 216, Big Game Hunting Permits. So that should be exciting. With that, the committee will stand adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 4:53 p.m.